This is File 2, Cycle 3. Today's date is October 15th, 2017. This is Jean McMillan, and I am interviewing Kevin Wiggins. He's going to talk about the Summer Youth Program, Norm Sills, John Hicks, and his business as an independent businessman. But first, we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
My name is Kevin Altonio Wiggins.
Is it Altonio?
Altonio.
Altonio. All right. A-L. Okay. And when were you born?
I was born October 14th, 1966.
Happy birthday, belated.
I turned 51.
I remember that age. Years ago. Where were you born?
I was born in Hartford, Connecticut.
Okay.
St. Francis Hospital.
Oh, good for you. Mm-hmm. And your parents' names. What's your mother's name?
My mother's name is Barbara Jean Huntley Wiggins. Mm-hmm. And my father's name is James Altonio Wiggins.
Senior.
Senior.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And do you have siblings?
I do.
And you have?
I have nine living siblings.
Now, the ones that I know here are?
Are Corey Wiggins and Kit Wiggins.
Okay. But you've got half brothers and sisters.
Yes, I do.
Okay. How did you come to this area if you were born in Hartford?
My grandmother lived up here with her second husband.
And her name was?
Her name was Ruth Garnes.
Okay. Was her husband Ernest Garnes?
Ernest.
Okay.
Ernest Garnes was her husband. And he had a garbage business.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting older and was thinking about
Retiring.
And he offered it to my father.
Okay.
And my father didn't want it, but he passed away.
Ah.
And so my grandmother had the business, had the house, and needed help. And so
you came up to help?
And my mother said yes, and my father had no choice.
Good woman!
Yeah.
That's
and
great.
And so, you know, the business was basically given to Ricky Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because he was the only employee that he had.
All righty.
That was the...
He did the Salisbury route.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
So that's how we got up here.
Wonderful. And your father's business was car detailing.
Up here. Yeah. Down there, he worked in the cleaners.
Okay. Yeah. A man of many skills.
Yep.
Were you in the summer youth program?
I was.
And when did you, what age were you when you went in?
13.
Okay, and you were, what, 1981?
Yeah, right around 1981, yeah.
81 to 84?
I was there for 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where did you work?
I worked on the Appalachian Trail.
And who was the supervisor of the whole business that had the Moses stick?
The top guy was Norm Sells.
Tell me a little bit about Norm. What did he look like to a 13-year-old?
To a 13-year-old, his Moses stick was probably a foot taller than he was.
Yeah.
So if the stick was 6 feet tall, he was 5 foot tall. But he just seemed like he shouldn't be out in the woods.
Uh-huh.
You know, he seemed kind of frail and skinny.
Yeah, yeah. But he had a lot of knowledge, didn't he?
Extremely smart man.
Yeah. What was the section that you worked on?
In 4 years, we covered from Macedonia State Park in Kent, Connecticut, mm-hmm. up to Mount Washington, to the Massachusetts border.
That's about, what, 30 to 40 miles?
That's a good hike. It took 4 years to maintain that.
How did you maintain it? What did you actually do?
The first priority was erosion control. Make sure that the rain wouldn't wash away the trails.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first priority.
Yep.
Is
yep.
to do whatever it took to maintain the trails.
To keep the water off.
Keep the water going where it needed to go. And we did it with using trees or stones, which, you know, created a little step, but it diverted the water to keep the trail from eroding.
Did you do any limbing or...
That was second priority.
Okay.
Yeah. So first priority was...
Keep the water off the trail.
Yep, erosion control. Second priority was the overgrown weeds and branches and whatever else might interfere with a great hike.
I think John Hicks said that it had to be 4 feet wide and 8 feet high.
That was it. And no power tools used. That was against the rules. No gas operated tools. Everything had to be done with hand tools.
That takes a lot of effort. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Was it a good learning experience?
It was a great learning experience. And the reason is going back to Norm's physical characteristics. You know, you've got a guy who looks feeble, and like I said, doesn't look like he should be anywhere in the woods, telling us how to do things that we thought were impossible.
Ah, isn't that great?
Yeah, you got a 130-pound kid paired up with a 120-pound kid and a 150-pound kid, and he's asking us to move 250 to 300-pound stones.
With no power.
Not one. But as many as it took to get done what he saw needed
to be done.
Yeah. And based on him, he didn't do it. He just told us how to do it. And we did it. And it worked.
Yeah. That's the surprising thing, isn't it? That it seems worked. Impossible, and yet there's tricks to the trade.
And it worked. And it carries worked. Through... For the rest of your adult years.
Oh, sure.
You can always go back and say, what would Norm do?
Yeah. Yeah. In every profession, there are shortcuts, there are tricks that you learn over time.
Right.
And then when somebody new comes in and they look at you in awe because you can do this, and you don't necessarily... realize how much you know until it comes to the fore.
Well, he helped us with making that connection of why we're in school. You know, when you're in school, you don't know how to apply it.
Right.
And he was one of those guys that I call an impact person.
Mm-hmm.
And he taught us how to apply...
what you knew.
Whatever, mathematics... whatever, there were so many things that he just helped us apply it, and then it worked.
Always surprising when it works.
Right.
Now, Norm said that oftentimes he would have to move a trail.
Mm-hmm.
When he would design a new trail through different property, would you have to go in and work that section too?
We would.
Okay.
Now, he would negotiate that with homeowners, and he would mark it out on his own.
Yeah.
And then once we got there, he would show us the markings, and you know, like then we would start with the second step.
Yep.
Which is clear.
Clearing.
The cutting of the brush and make it 4 feet by 8 foot.
Okay.
And then the second step was to go back, and that's where the hard part came in. Was how do we maintain it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do we need to put in these, he called them water bars.
Okay.
And that was just a way to divert the water to where it needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically it. You know, but he did all of that.
Preliminary.
He did all that on his own. And he knew what he was talking about, because once we got there, we were efficient. He told us what needed to be done. It got done.
Did you put anything on the trail, like wood chips or pine needles or anything, or was it just dirt?
Well, Mostly dirt.
Mostly dirt.
Mostly dirt.
How many would be in your crew to work?
Each group, you know, he would break it down to groups of 3 to 4. You know, so it was generally 4 or 5 groups on average.
Mm-hmm. That's a lot of kids.
It's a lot of kids.
Who supervised, if Norm was way up, you know, in heaven, who supervised the actual hands-on work?
Dave Lindsay.
Okay.
He was a teacher at Hodgkiss. Housatonic.
He was a science teacher, wasn't
science
he?
Science teacher, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And the director of the whole program at that time, Dave Beiersdorfer?
I really don't know.
I think it was Dave Beiersdorfer at that point. Who were some of the kids that you worked with?
They were all local kids.
Well, so naturally.
Yeah.
And I probably had them all.
Yeah, Kenny Percy. We had some of the kids my age. We had Chris Johnson was up there. Mm-hmm. And Silas Warner. I'm trying to remember. There were so many of them. So many different times.
Yeah, because you worked there 4 years.
Yeah, over a 4-year period, yeah.
You had said Ken Percy, Tom Orrell. Chris Johnson.
Chris Johnson. Tom Orrell became, he was one of the senior workers. He had been there, same thing, he had done the 4 or 5 year. He'd been there 4 or 5 years. He was 2 or 3 years older than me, so... We're talking about the order of, mm-hmm. and Norm was at the top, then Dave.
Yep.
And then for 2 years, Tom Orrell was the peer boss.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, okay. He was the oldest, he had the most experience. And there was one teacher from Berkshire, his name was Mark. I don't remember his last name. I was probably 14. And it was another science teacher, a friend of Dave Lindsay, but he would come down and help. So there was at least three people on the trail.
Yeah, and
if Norm wasn't there,
and adults as well as kids.
Yeah.
When did you go to work and when did you stop? I mean, did you work from 8 to 5 or what were your hours? Do you remember?
We worked from 7:30 to 4.
Every day of the week?
5 days a week.
Wow.
Yeah. I believe, yeah, 5 days a week. Yeah.
Boy, that would keep you out of mischief. You'd be tired when you got home.
It was good.
Yes. at that age, when you got the energy, it would be.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything specific about learning about hand tools that you've transformed into... what you're doing now? Leverage or anything like that?
Oh. I became a carpenter.
That's a good job.
Yeah, so I had a direct correlation from the trail to being outside, working with my hands, being... just, it was proven to me that you can do it.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Yeah.
You don't need machinery. And, I mean, you know, probably 10 years had passed, but then I realized that when I got a chance to work with local carpenters, it was okay. I really like this.
Good.
Because I can apply my math.
Yep. Yep.
Building construction is geometry.
Yeah, and your science would be physics.
Yeah.
Leverage and fulcrums
so
and all that good stuff.
I could take my math and my science, and I love music.
Oh.
And I was in shape, so.
Why not?
Seemed to make sense.
It makes sense. Oh, wonderful. Now, you guys had a special write-up in the Appalachian Mountain Club newsletter.
The ATC.
Tell me about that.
The first year, we were getting it together. So my first year, I was 13 years old. And like I said, there were a couple guys who had been involved in the program. And... so that was probably 1980, 1981. It was tough. We had a couple of really tough sections. There were some really bad storms, but a lot of rain. And this is the Sugarloaf over in Falls Village area.
I think Sugarloaf, I'm not sure.
Sugarloaf, I think is what it's called. Sugar...
Sugar Hill,
Sugar
Hill, something.
Sugar Hill.
Sugar Hill.
Sugar Hill.
Okay.
That's it. A very tough section. And we spent all summer working there. And that was the beginning of our write-ups.
Oh.
Because that place got basically washed out. And we came in, and it's very steep, kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
And... we took all of the scariness away, and that following summer, 1982, with people coming up through that way, and that was the first time we started getting noticed, because that was a treacherous area. A lot of people would bypass that,
sure,
and drive to Lakeville.
Ah, rather than hiking the trail.
That was an area between Housatonic High School and Salisbury Boys School that nobody wanted to hike.
Mm-hmm.
It just would, nobody was there to maintain it.
Okay.
It was treacherous. It was hard for a bear.
Oh!
I mean, it was just a really tough area.
Yeah.
It was steep, and there were a lot of places to get hurt.
Okay.
So that was the beginning of us getting on the map as far as the ATC, because we opened up that area again. Mm-hmm. So people can walk all the way up and through.
And were your write-ups because of the people on the crew, or was it a write-up because of hikers that were impressed with the way the trail was maintained?
Both.
Both. Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good.
If it wasn't for Norm, who cared?
Mm-hmm.
Who had the passion?
Oh, he did.
Right? If he didn't care, then we wouldn't have cared.
Right? Yep.
So it started with his passion. It started with us following through.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, it was the hikers that were coming through. And we didn't know who was recording what. You know, everybody that came through just... You know, it's like a food critic.
Yep.
You never know who's...
Yeah.
But that's what it took. It took for people coming through and saying, wow, we can... this is passable.
Mm-hmm. Good. So 4 years you've got write-ups for the best section.
Every year after that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It made, I would think it would make you feel very proud of what you've done.
All of us. Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this section before we go on to your independent business?
You know, the one thing I would like to add is we had a lot of guys that we knew they could do it. And there were a lot of guys that probably shouldn't have been there.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, there were girls mixed in with this whole group.
Yeah.
And the best thing was to see this crazy group of kids get together and work it out. Because off the mountain, a lot of us weren't friends.
Ah, that's good to know.
Because there was such a difference in age from 13 to 18.
Yeah, that's a big gap.
All right, so you got, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, I do.
So there was a lot of competition, there was a lot of I mean, everything. You just throw it in the pot, anything you can imagine.
Yeah.
And we got to see a lot of unusual groupings get together and persevere.
What a wonderful lesson.
And then eventually the whole group persevered because we realized that we all needed each other.
Everybody's got different skills and you needed all of them.
Yeah. Because a lot of it was, you forget about the danger.
Yeah.
You know, so at first you go in there and you're thinking, I'm the strongest kid and I'm this or I'm that. And I'm going to do this, and look what I did. And then you realize that none of it would have happened without
the others,
the weakest link.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the best thing. We became one big, caring
team.
Yeah. In the beginning, it was just a mess.
It's like some of the classes that I had.
It was a complete mess.
Yeah, it would be, because you're throwing kids together that wouldn't normally associate with one another.
Right. You know. So you've got some of the bad kids. Some of these kids were the best kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, some of these kids would be considered bullies.
Yeah, there were at-risk kids in that.
And there were some of these kids, you know, it was half and half. You had half of the kids who were at risk. You had another big section of the group that were all headed to private school.
Yep.
Or in private school.
Yep.
And you know, rich kids, poor kids.
Everything. Looking at the names that you've given me, and having had most of them in my classes, I can see where there'd be quite a difference. Quite a difference.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's great.
And we're all friends to this day.
Yeah, you make firm friends like that, and they stay friends.
All the way through.
Yep.
To this day.
Good.
It's still our little... we've all got each other's backs.
And that's important. Day. That's important.
It's incredible. It would have never happened for some of these relationships.
That is an aspect I hadn't thought of.
It would have never happened.
What a wonderful outcome.
There would have been a line drawn in the sand that would have never happened.
Wonderful. Yeah. Now, you said you became a carpenter because of the skills that you learned on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
How did you get your experience? Did you go to Oliver Wilcutt?
I did not.
What did you do?
I went to the School of Hard Knocks.
That's a good place to learn. That is a good place to learn.
Yeah. So, in the summers, during college, I started working for Dennis Rooney.
For whom?
Dennis Rooney, a craftsman out of Armenia. And it was in a shop,
okay.
A wood shop. It started off probably when I was 18. And I did 2 years with him, just working in the shop as an apprentice. And I wasn't doing any carpentry. I was sweeping floors, I was stacking wood, I was sharpening chisels and black planes and holding boards and holding this and holding that and getting yelled at for holding it.
The wrong way.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, I loved it.
Good.
I loved it. Yeah. So, when I got my first construction job out of the wood shop, I knew how to run every tool. Yeah, I could cut anything. I could prep anything. I could mill the wood. But I didn't know how to do anything else besides that.
Mm-hmm. So you needed the next step.
Right. And you know, and I was able to make crown molding, but I didn't know how to install it.
Okay.
Because I started off at a shop.
Sure.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I started, all I did in a shop, I would get my order. I need 10 pieces of crown at this big, and I would...
You'd produce it, but...
I would produce it. I would go to the pile of wood.
Yep.
That would, some of it would still have bark on it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I would have to straighten it, and, you know, join it, plane it, rip it.
Yep.
Head to the router table and set. Well, back then, most of the moldings were done on a table saw.
Yes, they would have been.
With the custom-made knives. Yeah. If you needed to make them custom, but they had a lot of knives that could fit contours and you could make it work, but I just caught the bug. Like I said, it was math and physics, and I was able to apply what I learned in the classroom.
But it was something you liked to do, so you wanted to learn more.
Like I said, it was literally, those were my two favorite things, was math and science.
Yeah, I remember.
And I was able, I was useful on no matter what crew I was on.
Yeah, sure.
It was useful. Like, for a little example, is the one guy, I was on one crew, I just don't want to say their name, but the head guy would do all the math. Anything complicated. He'd get his little calculator out. Well, eventually one day the battery died. And then he went to the second calculator, and the battery died.
And then he asked Kevin.
Then he had a third calculator, and he went to in his little briefcase, and he pulled that out, battery died. Didn't know what to do. So a couple minutes goes by, and now he's starting to freak out, because he can't do the math longhand.
Uh-huh.
And so here comes Kevin.
Yep.
On a sheet of plywood.
And a carpenter's pencil.
And I figured out the rafters for him. With no math. And from that day on, they started calling me the math wizard.
Yep. Yep. Because you knew how to do it. Sure.
And I mean, so I felt useful.
Oh, yeah.
Because I still was in the bottom rungs.
Yeah, but still, that was a skill that you had.
Now the older guys were looking at me as like, wow, this kid, he knows.
He knows something.
He knows a little more here.
Yeah.
He's more valuable than we thought.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm like, geometry. And,
good.
You know, science, like I said, with leverage, and I understood a lot with building.
Yeah.
Because of science and math.
Sure, sure.
And eventually I got rewarded for it. And I just got the bug. And
you said that in two years you went through about 10? No, 10 years you went through several contractors.
And, yeah, in a 10-year period, I went through almost a dozen contractors.
But learning a different skill with each one.
The only goal was to expand my resume. That was my goal. How do I learn as much as I can? The quickest way. And that was to work with as many guys as I could.
Mm-hmm. When you went from one to another, did you have a recommendation or did you just move?
I would put in my 2 weeks.
And then just leave?
I would already have the job lined up.
Okay. So you weren't leaping from the fire into the firing pan?
No, that was advice I got a long time ago. Good advice was the best time to search for a job is when you have one.
That's good advice.
No stress. You're not going to make any quick
foolish
decisions.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, so, but, you know, like I said, I would, for example, I get on a job. Might be four guys. Two of them are in their 40s. Mm-hmm. I'm 20.
Yeah.
You know, they've got families. They've been there for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. What can a 20-year-old do to take their job?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you learn as much as you can. You know? And sometimes you would stay a little bit longer just because you enjoy their company.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually you're like, all right, I've reached the ceiling. It's time to go to the next guy and tell him I can do whatever I'm good at doing at that time. And then you go to the next guy, and then your list just grows and grows and grows.
When did you decide that you wanted to work by yourself? Or did it just come naturally?
I decided that I wanted to work for myself after 25 years of being in the business. I was in the business after 25 years working for some great contractors, great stories. And one day I ran into an old friend of mine. His name is John Humes. We went to Salisbury Boys School together. He's from Canaan, Connecticut. And I ran into him at the gas station in Lakeville, Connecticut, and he asked me if I was still painting. How was the painting going? Because he only remembered me painting in freshman, sophomore year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all painted.
Oh, sure.
At some point.
Yep.
In the summers, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, here he is. He's in Canaan. We live 8 miles away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
And all he remembered was me as a painter.
Yeah.
And that was when I realized that I needed to stop building houses for people who don't live here.
Uh-huh.
full time.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't. I lived in the community, but I wasn't working with the community. That was a turning point for me. That was a big, big turning point for me. And that's when I started. I stopped building houses, and it hurt. It financially hurt.
Yeah, it would. It would. You know? Because you weren't getting a steady paycheck.
I was not. I had to completely start over, and that's why I got into card detailing.
Mm-hmm. That's your second occupation.
And I got into coaching basketball. Yeah, and and the carpentry. So I had to expand a little bit, and I started helping my brother paint. So I had to expand to try to keep money coming in to make this transition from.
Oh sure.
To working for myself, getting my name out there.
Yeah.
Locally.
You don't advertise, do you?
I do not.
It's all word of mouth.
It's all word of mouth for now.
Yeah.
I'm changing.
You think you're going to start advertising pretty soon?
I am.
Good.
But you know what that comes. Once I start advertising, I will need help.
I noticed with Corey, it used to be Corey's painting, and now it's Wiggins' painting. Whether, and I don't know why he changed that, whether he thought it had more cachet, I don't know, but I noticed that the other day. You do the coaching because you like to volunteer? Do you get paid, or is it a volunteer thing?
I don't. It costs me money.
Usually volunteering does. But you like doing it.
I love it.
Yeah, and you coach what?
I coach basketball. Yeah, from fifth grade all the way to high school.
Boys, girls,
boys.
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 And where do you actually do this? Do you do it at Hotchkiss?
Most of it is at Hotchkiss during the school year. Yeah, once a week we meet.
Do you think in your carpentry that you have a specialty, or are you just a generalist?
My specialty is carpentry.
That's what you do, and you do all of it.
I consider myself an old-time carpenter.
Do you use power tools?
I do.
But you know how to do...
I started without power tools.
Okay.
And when I say old-time carpenter, when I first got into the business, we did everything.
Mm-hmm. There
wasn't an insulation company. There wasn't that many roofing companies. There wasn't that many sheetrocking companies. There wasn't that many. Carpenter...
Did everything.
Needed to know the whole house.
When I built this house in 78, I had a contractor and he did everything.
Yeah.
Sheetrock, insulation, everything.
The carpenter needed to at least have the knowledge.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he hires somebody else, he can say, you're doing it right or you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. No, there was...
All the way through.
The only subcontracting was the electrical work and the plumbing.
Yeah. But even so, the carpenter should have an idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of how it all works.
Sure.
You know, the plumbing, the electrical, all of it. So I consider myself, because I've been asked, would you prefer finished carpentry or a framing?
Yeah.
And I say, what's the difference?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the framing is more important.
But the finished is more precise. No?
It shouldn't be.
Okay. All right.
Because the framing is your backbone.
Well, yeah. Sure.
See how I was taught that?
Okay.
I was taught the shaker. I was... What did they say? When they passed the torch?
Mm-hmm.
Or I was part of that. Mm-hmm. That apprenticeship. Where this is how... It's been done. This is what works. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of carpenters today that, unfortunately, they didn't have that chance to be taught. They didn't have it passed down.
Yeah.
You know, so the framing, that is your house.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, the trim is the lipstick.
Okay. Makes sense.
All right,
you've got your foundation, and then you've got your cosmetics.
So if you don't care about the framing, then your house can shift and move and shift and settle.
All right.
The framing has to be precise.
All right.
And then that makes the trim work easy.
Then you have to know about stress, load bearing,
yes,
beams, and things like that.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Geographically, what area do you cover?
Mostly Litchfield County, Region 1. Did I say Litchfield County?
Yeah.
Let's reduce that to Region 1.
Okay.
Mostly Region 1.
Okay, well, that's a big area.
Well, sometimes I'm in Cornwall,
yeah,
for a month, and sometimes I'm in Cater for a week, and it's not bad.
Do you work 6 days a week?
I do.
And then you coach on Saturday, on Sundays?
I coach on Sundays, yeah.
When do you get the car detailing in? Do you do that evenings and weekends or during the spring, fall, and summer?
I usually try to do the detailing early in the week.
Okay.
Yeah. So Sunday afternoon after basketball, or Monday and Tuesday. And there's an occasional Saturday, whatever.
Whatever you can fit it in.
However we can fit it in.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this part of the interview before we close? Anything about carpentering or power tools or?
Not too much. I think I about covered it all.
If you had it to do over again, would you have gone to a technical school like Oliver Wilcutt for carpentry? Or do you think the way you went through the School of Hard Knocks was a better experience?
Well, if I... Here's the thing. If I had to do it again, and I knew that I wanted to be a carpenter at that age, I definitely would have gone to a technical school.
Okay.
But when I was... At that age, I was playing hockey.
Yep.
And I was told that I could play pro. I was also a semi-professional BMX rider. So I had a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
That I really loved.
Sure.
You know? And I was playing music. You know, so I thought there was an avenue for that too.
Sure.
I had too many avenues.
Yeah, you had too many choices.
And I was pretty good at all of them.
Yeah, well,
you know,
sure.
So at the end of the day, I didn't have that one thing that I could focus on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the School of Hard Knocks was kind of inevitable.
And it was a good place for you to learn.
Like I said, I didn't have my mind made up.
Yeah.
It just keeps going. And tomorrow comes, and eventually you have to make a decision.
Thank you, Kevin, so very much.